torn. And I'm torn because the downing of this aircraft is such major news. In a place that is the catalyst right now for world tensions. And you know, part of me says we should go back to Paul and expose him on behalf of Christians, condemn him on behalf of Christians. But part of me says that we ought to stick with this story because of the consequences of this story. The United States has deliberately tried to lure the Ukraine away from Russian influence into NATO. We, in the West, have loaned the Ukrainians money on three occasions, billions of dollars. And they were $30 billion in arrear because every time they took the money, they reneged on their agreements to pay it back. And so because they were dependent on Russian oil and gas, and there was commerce there, and because they are comprised to a large degree of Russians, and because the Ukraine was part of Russia for 300 years, and because of the Russian oil pipelines that go to Europe, took a macadamia nut during the break, and it is clinging to the back of my throat. So if you hear me coughing, I'm trying to deal with the improperly swallowed macadamia nut here. We're then now dealing with a situation in Ukraine where the United States then sponsored the protests that turned Kiev into a seat of anarchy, that led to the deaths of 70 people, both on the government side and on the protester side, with the protesters burning buildings, people inside of them using Molotov cocktails. And they brought the popularly elected government down. And once they did, the Kiev government was in a position to accept a $25 billion gift from the International Monetary Fund, which primarily comes from U.S. taxpayers. But that wasn't enough for the West. What the West wanted to do then was to get the Ukraine into NATO. And the best way to do that was to have the new Ukrainian government, not, you can't really call it a government because it's just a group of thugs, begin to harass the ethnic Russians, which they did at the United States insurgents. The United States sent over its CIA chief, it sent over its NATO chief, it sent over its vice president, sent over its secretary of state, all to say, we're with you, go get them. Go get them. My canine here, my dog friend, thinking go get him means that she's supposed to go woof at him. Maybe that's what we should have done. And so we now have a civil war in Ukraine that the United States doesn't want to honor the people's will when they voted to separate themselves from the thugs in the Ukraine, and that they're ethnic Russians, they speak Russian, they've been Russian citizens most of their lives, and they want to just go back and be part of Russia again. But that's not what the United States wants. So the United States has constantly blamed Russia for the very behavior that it has inspired. And now the country's embroiled in the civil war. More and more people are dying. And now this airplane crashes over Ukrainian warspace. And you can expect the president of the United States, who is an absolute scumbag, to blame the Russians. And you can expect many in his party and on the opposite side of the aisle, led by the shrill voice of John McClown in Arizona, to join him. But folks, what we're moving towards is World War III. This is very scary stuff. Now, I read some of the first comments that readers deduced from this article. The first is from an independent text, and he says, I'm interested to hear an explanation from Malaysian Airlines as to why they were flying their planes over a war zone. Given their recent track record, I don't intend to be boarding any of their planes in the near future. Now, that's a, Mr. Independent Texan, that's a wise statement. That was foolish of them. The next person is a fool. It says, call me a conspiracy theorist, but I'm still deeply unsettled over the whereabouts of MH370, and now this. I refuse to believe that the plane flew south towards Antarctica in the middle of the ocean. Only an idiot would believe that, and now this. Perhaps it's just an eerie coincidence. I'll say that much. Oh, come on. Rapid decompression. The crew fell asleep. The plane flew wherever it was going to fly. Didn't matter if it was north, south, east, or west. Everybody on that plane fell asleep. That's why the airplane flew out to the middle of the ocean. Sorry about that. 285 laws were last very sad, eerily. This is the centennial year for the First World War. By the way, that's exactly what I thought when I saw this airplane news. You know, how the world had all these pacts and alliances and treaties and mutual defense agreements and mutual war decrees, and one idiot shot one idiot, and all of a sudden, because of all the defense agreements, the world was at war in World War I, and we were gassing one another. And the United States even arranged to have the Lusitania sunk so that we could go to the aid of J.P. Morgan, the banker that was financing England in a conflict that no one should have been involved in, much less the United States. And then all sorts of propaganda was used to lure American boys into those muddy disease and chemical-laden trenches. This was the centennial year. This was a much bigger incident than the assassination of the Archduke or whatever the individual was in Serbia. An occurrence of dire portent. If unchecked, it could escalate into full-scale war. Boy, this is a time for patience and restraint. It's not really so much a time for patience and restraint as it is for coming to grips with the truth. Coming to recognize who are the liars. Who are the aggressors. This is the reason why I decided that I was going to move from exposing and condemning the founder of Christianity, Paul, the author of half the Christian New Testament, to these comments about this story. After Tor, it's A for Tor is the, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it, but that's how it's written, is the person. He's in New York, is where A for Tor lives. He wrote, already the Putin bashers are sharpening their claws. Oddly, he is the only one to have shown some restraint and a rational approach to the Ukraine, regardless of what the U.S. pestitudes have been saying. Boy, do I agree with that. If it was, in fact, shot down over the Ukraine, it would be well to think about how the neo-Nazis and fascist battalions in the Ukraine might have done this. That's also true. It is well documented that they, in fact, were among the snipers at the Maidan and the troops who stuffed protesters in Odessa into the labor union building and then surrounded that building as they burned so many people alive. Poroshenko has been apologetic about Russia since he took office. A strange role and a characteristic for a chocolate billionaire who has his factory in Russia. Stay tuned, folks, he writes. The U.S.-Ukraine nexus will try to drop this burning tire about Russia's neck. If so, their desperation will be obvious to many of us. I'm sure I will get many replies by the Putin-Russia bashers, another sign of desperation. A person from Australia writes, this is just utter madness. Maybe we are already in World War III and just don't know it, because every country is both aggressor and victim. Tony, this is horrible. We need another reset button for Russia. He's laughing, mocking the president who is going to reset the relationships with Russia and now has become their antagonist. George wrote, why are planes flying over war zones? Peter Murphy said, the situation in Ukraine and now this tragedy are the direct result of the Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, kumbaya approach to foreign relations. On all of these issues, but particularly missile defense, this can be solved. But it's important for him, Putin, to give space, to provide space. This is my last President Barack Obama's comment. So let me read it as a quote from Barack Obama. I was trying to make sense of it from this person writing it, but it's a quote. On all of these issues, but particularly on missile defense, this can be solved. But it's important for him, Putin, to give me space to do so. This is my last election. After my election, I'll have more flexibility to disarm and abandon Eastern Europe. In parentheses, President Barack Obama's comment to Russian President Dmitry Medvedev, not realizing that he'd be heard over the open microphone. So Peter Murphy thinks that that this is happening because Obama, rather than being a verbal hawk, is instead a patsy giving control of Europe to Russia. Peter, you're an idiot. You couldn't think, Peter, if your life depended on it. Judy from Fairfax, Virginia, wrote, we'll have to learn a lot more, and we have to learn it from someone aside from Malaysian Airlines. It could easily be any one of thousands of mechanical failures or an explosive decompression from something in the hold. Yeah, they had an explosive decompression once before, and an airplane crashed. We'll be back. Folks, I can't tell you how this is going to play out. I was able to tell you how the events in Syria with the Islamic State and in Iraq is going to play out, because God told us and because it's obvious. The Islamic State has become the world's largest terrorist organization. It has achieved what no other Islamic terrorist organization has throughout history. And it will continue to menace the world. In this particular case, there was no chance that the United States was going to allow the Ukrainian Donetsk Crimea situation to resolve itself prudently, rationally, morally, democratically. And now there's the downing of a civilian aircraft. Now, there are lots of options. There is a possibility that since this is Malaysian Airlines and the loss of the Malaysian airliner months ago was in all likelihood caused by a rapid decompression of the cabin, whereby the airplane continued to fly but without human input. That there is somebody who works on Malaysian airliners that is manipulating those systems in such a way to cause a rapid decompression. And this time they may have brought the airplane down in a more egregious way. That's a possibility, that somebody working with Malaysian Airlines is complicit in doing this. It's a possibility, since it's a Malaysian Airlines, a Muslim-owned airline, that there was a bomb aboard. Muslims have been known to put bombs above in airplanes. And there is the possibility that the Ukrainians shot it down. They've done that before. to commercial airlines. There's the possibility, however unlikely, that the Russians did it, because they have also brought down commercial airlines. So have the Americans. The possibility that it was brought down by the rebels. We don't know. But we know that our rhetoric, our actions, our monetary policy, our military policy, through the IMF and through NATO, and the rhetoric through Obama Nation, has brought the world to the precipice of war with Russia, with Muslims, and with China. It's a very dangerous time. And folks, while I can't tell you how this is going to materialize, I can tell you it isn't just going to go away. Tomorrow's not going to be the same as yesterday. I can tell you there is only one hope. And that hope cannot be found in your government. They're a bunch of lying bastards. What your government is doing is counterproductive. It is insane. It is suicidal. You ought to do everything in your power to distance yourself from, to expose and condemn your government. You ought to come to realize that your military is making you more vulnerable, not safer. Robbing you, constraining you, not making you more free. You ought to come to recognize that the government's entitlements are not enriching Americans, they're indebting them. It's important for you to recognize that the most prevalent religion in America, with about 45% of Americans now embracing it, is Christianity. Now more than that is a percentage of the total population who call themselves Christians, but in most recent polls, when asked about whether or not you trust religion, only 45% of Americans answered yes. So 55% of you have come to realize that religion is something you ought not trust. There is only one individual you can't trust. It's not me. His name is Yahweh. You may be unfamiliar with that name. If you are, it's because your religion, if you have one, has deliberately misled you. They replaced Yahweh's name with the Lord. Yahweh's name is the most important name in the universe. He is actually God, the one and only God. There is no God named Jesus Christ. There is no God named Allah. There is only one. His name is Yahweh, and he alone can be trusted. He introduced himself to us in his Torah. His Torah does not mean law. It is not a Jewish book. It is a book of instructions. It was written to guide us. And in specific, to guide us to know Yahweh. We'll speak more on this in a moment. The world is falling apart. We have reached a point of no return. It is falling apart educationally, where generations now have been indoctrinated with political correctness, and most young people are incapable of exercising good judgment. They're incapable of being rational. The indoctrination system that we call education has done this to them. We are bankrupt economically. The United States has a greater debt than its GDP. And if you put in its contingent liabilities, its unfunded mandates, then the American debt is 5 or 6 times greater than our gross domestic product. It's unresolvable. We've destroyed our economy. We've built the world's largest war machine. It's larger than the rest of the world combined. We're the world's leading merchants of death, supplying weapons of mass destruction while we speak out against weapons of mass destruction. We're picking fights with the Chinese, with the Russians, and with Muslims. The whole world is against us. There is no hope. When religions promise hope, they're lying. When the snake oil salesman says, take my product and you'll be healthy, they're lying. When the conspiracy theorist touts their explanation, they're lying. When the politician opens their mouth, they're lying. There is no hope in any of these human institutions. Most of you have come to realize it. There's only one individual that you can trust, and you can trust him explicitly. He is Yahweh. He introduces himself to us in his Torah. In his Torah, he not only accurately records how and when he created the universe, providing every possible insight so that if you read that account, you come away recognizing that this is exactly how it happened, and when it happened, why it happened. And everything he said is completely consistent with science as we know it, including the timing of the events. And he speaks of how he was so distraught into what man had become, that we had become vicious, conniving, corrupt, deadly. He spoke of what man had become in 1,000 years after Adam and Chawa had been exiled from the garden in lamentable terms. It saddened him, grieved him, of what we had become, of what human institutions, politically, militarily, religiously, had conceived. And so God did hit the reset button. And he told us that an upwelling of seawater caused the flood amongst those humans who had a nesoma, which was a conscience, something that very few of us use these days. And we have found the evidence for the flood occurring exactly as he said, where he said, when he said. And then he goes on to say, this is the reason that I created the universe. And he presents his covenant. And it's interesting, he doesn't just say, okay, here's the terms and conditions of my covenant, you accept them, and we're golden, go on with your lives. No, he presents the terms and conditions as well as the benefits of this covenant, which is the only reason that he created the universe and mankind in the first place. Through an individual. He reached out to a person living in the America of that time, the world superpower, politically, militarily, economically, religiously, Babylon. And he asked Abram to leave Babylon, to go with him to an entirely different place, just as Yahusha concludes his prophetic words to us in Revelation by quoting Yahshua and saying, come out of her, my people, speaking of Babylon. We're still there, mired in Babylon, in religion and politics, economic schemes and military misadventures. And so this covenant that Yahweh wants us, invites us to participate in, is the only reason he created the universe. He wants a family. It's the only thing that God didn't have. Was the enjoyment of a relationship with a being that could choose to love him or reject him, to ignore him, if that being wished to. And so he gave us free will, and he gave us a nesama, conscience, so that we could come to know him, come to engage in a relationship with him. And that relationship has a prerequisite, my friends, and I'm going to share this with you because it is the only way to save yourself and your family from what the world is now experiencing, which is an ever-escalation of death, of corruption, of political and religious malfeasance and lies. If you wished to be part of God's family, of his covenant, the first thing you must do is walk away from religion and politics. It's important that you come to recognize that your leader, whoever he may or she may be, is a liar. That they do not have your interest at heart. In fact, what they're doing is counterproductive. They ought not be trusted. You need to disassociate from your country. You ought to disassociate from the culture that you were raised in, which was almost undoubtedly a religious culture. Unless you're willing to walk away from placing your trust in human institutions, you have no opportunity whatsoever to engage in a relationship with God. You will never be able to rely on him. He is the only reliable individual in the universe. And if you're still going to cling to religion and politics, to militarism, to patriotism, you're not welcome in his family. You won't even be receptive to his offer. You can't have both. You can't be a patriot and be part of the covenant. You can't be religious and be part of the covenant. You can't be political and be part of the covenant. You must disassociate from these things, which is why we spend so much time exposing and condemning them, making it easier for you to do the right thing. And then once you've disassociated from religion and politics, Yahweh was saying, come to trust and rely on him. That's what he's asking us to do. It's what he's inviting us to do. Now, you can't trust someone that you do not know. And the only place you can come to know Yahweh is by observing what he wrote to us in his Torah, to find out who he is. And if you don't come to like him, you just ought to reject his offer of being part of his family. If you do come to like him, as I have come to know him and like him, enjoy his company, find him humble and yet exciting to be around, fun, loves humor, loves to party. His idea of real fun, a real good time, is camping out together and exploring, sharing ideas. If you come to like him, then you come to know him, then you're in a position to trust him. And once you come to know what he's offering through his covenant, you're in a position to rely upon him and it, his offer. And that's the second condition. The third is to walk to and become perfect. There's only one way we can walk to God and become perfect. The person that God loves the most in all of creation is a fellow named Dod, whose name was corrupted to David. And he was a bit of a rascal. Becoming perfect doesn't mean that you don't ever do anything that's wrong, because God loved Dod more than anyone who's ever lived. Going to model the millennial Shabbat, his return, and celebration of 1,000 years of Sukkah, of camping out together on earth, in the name of the kingdom of Dod, of David. And yet this was a bad boy in terms of his behavior. So we don't walk to God and become perfect based upon our behavior. We walk to God and become perfect based upon what he has done, based upon what he has offered. And there is one pathway to God, that where we can capitalize on what God has done, on what he has offered, and become perfect. And that is through the Mikra, which is why that corruption of ecclesia, which was a translation of Mikra to church, is so devastating. Why it has robbed so many billions of peoples of their souls. It is through the actual Mikra, these invitations to be called out and meet with God, sometimes called feasts, sometimes called festivals, sometimes called assemblies. But they're meetings with God. God's established the meeting time and elaborated the purpose of the meeting and invited us to attend and said, if you don't attend, you're going to die and death will be permanent. If you're going to oppose these meeting times, then you're not going to die, but you're going to be eternally separated from me, estranged from me. That means you're going to go to Sheol, known to so many as hell. But if you're willing to answer these invitations and to meet with me on these days, then he says he'll make us perfect. The doorway where we begin this journey is called Passover. It's the doorway to life eternal. It's part of becoming perfect. The second step on this journey is matzah. It is the threshold into God's home. It is the welcome mat where our souls are scrubbed, where we are redeemed, where Yahweh, his soul, having gone into Sheol in our stead, in matzah in 4000 CE, 33 CE, makes us perfect. That's what matzah is all about, removing the fungus of yeast from our souls. This enables us to be born anew, to be born from above, into Yahweh's family as his children. His children of the covenant, adopted into God's family on Bikurim, which means firstborn children. This then, for those of us who answer these invitations to meet with God so as to become perfect, not only become the sons and daughters of Yahweh, inheriting all that he has to give, but the promise of seven, Shavuah, which is celebrated seven Sabbaths after Pukurim, after firstborn children. Yahweh's covenant children are enriched, we're enlightened, we're empowered. That's the purpose of that day. Now, the path to God continues with Teruah, where we shout out a warning and speak of great joy, of telling people that are not on this path that they are walking away from God, and telling people that God has this marvelous offer of to adopt us into his family. This is followed by the Day of Reconciliation, Yom Kippurim, and ultimately to Sukkah, where we camp out with God. In the final segment of the program, I'll share the final two conditions of the covenant, so that you can come to rely on Yahweh. We'll be back. I've shared the first three conditions of the covenant. The first is to walk away from Babylon. It's religion and politics, militarism and patriotism. God's not going to allow those things in his home. If you're not going to disassociate with them, you are not welcome in his family. There are no religious people in heaven. There are no Christians, no Muslims in heaven. No Hindus in heaven. No practitioners of rabbinic Judaism in heaven. One of the things that everyone in heaven has in common is that they have disassociated from religion and from politics. There are no old soldiers in heaven. If you're going to be a warrior, you're excluded from God's home. If you're going to be a politician, you're excluded from God's home. They can have their earthly statues, because there'll be no remembrance of them in heaven. That's the first requirement. And if God didn't have that requirement, then heaven would be worse than hell. And all the hell that we perpetrate in this world through our militaries and the death and carnage they impose on the world, through our politics and through its lies and corruptions, through the false hope of religion, all of the hell that has been perpetrated on this world. If God did not preclude religious and political and militaristic individuals from heaven, then eternally heaven would grow to be worse than the hell we've inflicted on our lives here on earth. It is a prerequisite, my friends. If you want to have a relationship with God, you cannot be religious. Second is that you must walk to God and become perfect, so that you end up trusting and relying entirely on him. Well, there's only one way to do that, and that is also found in the Torah, where God provides the path to him, where he constantly promotes the path that he has provided to him, a path that he has paved, a path that he has made straight, a path that he says is reliable. And that path is presented in only one place, and that's the Torah, which is why the book is called Guidance. And that path is through the seven Moed Mikre, the seven invitations to meet with God. It's the first four of them that provide the very benefits of the covenant. God wants us to walk to him and become perfect. He has provided the way. He wants us to trust and rely upon him in this way. The fourth requirement for participating in the Torah, to participating in the covenant, is to observe the terms and conditions of the covenant. You see, if you're going to become part of God's family and you're going to enter his home, you need to know what the rules are of the house. And there are some ground rules. You can't be religious. You can't rely on human schemes. Need to come to rely on Yahweh, to trust him. You need to answer his invitations to meet with him. These are conditions for being part of the covenant family. And God is saying, if you're not willing to consider these conditions, then you're not welcome. You know, God is saying that making it really clear that you come to him by coming to know him through observation, by studying the words that he has provided in his Torah regarding his covenant. that you come to know him by observing him. It's not the condition of your heart. It's not how you feel. It's not whether you were a good or a bad person. It has nothing to do with any of that. You come to participate in the covenant by observing the terms and conditions of the covenant and accepting them. You can't accept that which you don't know. If you don't know that there are five terms and conditions of the covenant, it's impossible for you to be part of God's family. So, literally, observing them, coming to know what these terms and conditions are to be part of God's family, to engage in this relationship with Him, is essential. Because there's only one way to form a relationship with God. It's only one way to be part of God's family, only one means to be saved. And all of this exists in the Torah's testimony found in Bar Reshith, the first book of the Torah, where God walks us through the process of how we, too, can become members of His family. And the fourth condition is to observe what He has to say, to pay attention to it, to closely examine and carefully consider these terms and conditions of the covenant. And lastly, my friends, God wants us to raise our family so that our children become His children. He asks us, as a sign of our commitment, our participation in this covenant, to circumcise our sons. He wants us to do it on the eighth day, which is the symbol of eternity, of everlasting life, of a family that will live together forever. We'll be with you at this time, tomorrow.